The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading you from Our State magazine. And today's reading of Our State is underwritten, as it always is, by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. Want to talk to them? Give them a call at 919-781-1973. And now, one more time, we shall return to the Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina August 2018 edition, whose theme this month has been the Lakes issue. And we're going to hit the lakes big time with a couple of articles, the first of which is entitled Pontoon Party. As the sun begins its leisurely dip into High Rock Lake, so do the lake dwellers of Lexington. On Thursday evenings, they tie their boats together for a floating block party. A silvery pontoon boat pulls up alongside Jim and Paula Noonan, music blaring. "How are you, hon?" yells a woman in sunglasses and bathing suit cover-up. "Hey, darling, good to see you," Paula hollers as she helps secure the boats, linking them with the three pontoons floating together on High Rock Lake. Meanwhile, another pontoon is already pulled up to the first one, followed by another one, adding to the growing chain. Soon, 13 pontoons are lined up and tied together, bobbing in the middle of the lake near the mouth of the Yadkin River. Jim slaps a few more pork chops on the grill, each landing with a satisfying hiss. Paula cranks up the classic rock, playing from a miniature speaker. Women in visors and capris, just the right length for dipping toes in the water, carefully step from boat to boat, carrying appetizers, sides, or desserts that they've brought for dinner. Gentlemen in fishing tournament t-shirts exchange hearty greetings as they cross through side doors and balance on bows. Everyone calls each other hun or baby or darlin', regardless of relation. Here at the High Rock Redneck Yacht Club, there are no strangers. "This is the friendliest place I've ever lived," says Paula, a longtime real estate agent in the Lexington area. She and Jim built their lakefront home in 1998 after they got married. In the summer, the Noonans and a few of their lake friends would gather on the water for dinner and drinks. The group became a Thursday night fixture in the early 2000s, thanks in part to Linda Webster, who spearheaded the effort to organize the festivities. "Sometimes we don't have more than four, five, six boats. Sometimes we have a whole bunch," Linda says, sporting a faded High Rock Redneck Yacht Club tank top over her bathing suit. "It grew from a very small gathering to what you see now," she continues, motioning to the dozens of people, almost none of them on their own boats by now. Then she nods toward Paula and Jim's boat. "The damn thing, that's D-A-M, thang came to fruition about 2 years ago, and that's been a real asset. Damn Thang is the Noonan's pontoon boat and bar creation, which they attached onto the port side of their main pontoon. Tricked out with wooden countertops, stools, umbrellas for shade, and a grill, sink, and cooler in the back, it's the perfect vessel for a floating party. Before the damn thing, the group would squeeze around a folding table in one of the boats, which just about sank every time. Meanwhile, Paula had a broken pontoon platform that she had hoped to use as a floating pier, but lake regulations wouldn't allow it. "We just had it sitting there," she said, "so my husband comes up with this brilliant idea, and I'm thinking, why? Why does it have to be us?" Jim worked on the new project for about a year, often to Paula's chagrin. I would say, "Honey, can you go do something for me? And he'd say, no, I'm going to work on the boat today. Her reply, that damn thing. The name stuck. Now standing in the middle of damn thing, Paula whistles and calls out, get a little closer, everyone, but don't sink the boats. The group quiets down as she introduces two newcomers, Adam and Nicole, who haven't been able to get out until today because the water at their dock has been too shallow. She thanks God for this time of frivolity and joy and blesses the covered dishes lining the counter. Pasta salad, blueberry salsa, casseroles, watermelon, cookies and brownies, and Jim's signature pork chops hot off the grill. Sometimes we all have desserts and one chicken plate, and sometimes we have all salads, Paula says, laughing. But it doesn't matter. We're out here for the camaraderie. After dinner, someone makes a joke about jumping into the lake, which is all the prodding anyone needs to cool off. One man leaps in with an unopened can of beer still in his hand. Others hold their sangria aloft while balancing on pool noodles. They clink their glasses together as one happy swimmer calls out, lake life is the best life. When the sun dips closer to the horizon, offering up a grand finale of pink and orange streaks, Paula turns sentimental, thinking about what these weekly gatherings mean to her. It's tradition. It's sharing. She pauses. It's just what it is. It ain't nothing special. It's just real special. As night begins to fall, the boats disperse as quickly as they arrived. Jim and Paula are among the last to leave, pulling Damn Thang along with them, their boat's white mooring lights blinking as they ride off into another sunset. Written by Katie King, the editorial assistant at Our State. And now, Wake and Lake. Send a postcard, or rather spend a postcard-perfect afternoon lounging on a dock or catching air behind a boat, and one question will surely cross your mind. How can I make lake life real life? Three generations of the Fields family have found the answer on Lake Gaston. Lewis Fields, with must gray hair, a trimmed mustache, bifocals, and a stilted gait, walks down a concrete path toward the dock. It's a cool morning, 6 a.m., quiet. The water is nearly still. Lewis tosses a few things into his speedboat, life jacket, knee brace, back brace, a single ski. More equipment than a hockey player, he says. He pushes a lever, lowers the boat in the water, and kicks on the motor, the noise gurgling through the boggy air. It's about a five-mile ride across Lake Gaston to the place where the temporary slalom course will be set up this morning. Lewis's buddy Pat, who's doing jumping jacks on the dock as the boat approaches, gets to go first. Lewis drives for a few runs, his boat zipping down the middle of the buoys, the cruise control set at 34 miles per hour. Finished, he takes off his glasses and splashes in. Now it's Pat's turn to open the throttle. Lewis rises out of the water and swings wide as the boat gets up to speed. Just before the first buoy, he zips across the wake, leaning back, a slightly strained look on his face, his outside arm coming off of the handle as he arcs nimbly around the buoy, then back, then forth, back, forth. The first run, 17 seconds long, is perfect. The second one is not. Lewis lets go of the rope after the second buoy, loses speed, and sinks cartoonishly while Pat whips the boat around. Hitting the water at full speed is akin to bouncing off concrete. Letting go is the safest thing to do when something goes wrong. I don't think he's gonna quit on that one, Pat says, just before Lewis can hear him. Can't quit on that one, Lewis yells a beat later. On the third run, Lewis lets go of the rope again, and Pat predicts correctly that Lewis will quit on this one. Slalom skiing works every muscle, like playing tug-of-war with a Chevy, Pat says, and Lewis's back is sore. He's been getting or he's been slowly getting back into his routine, and it's early in the season anyway. It's too hard to go full bore. But Lewis is worried, in fact, he's always worried, that if he quits, that's it. Not just for this morning or this month, but for good. Lewis has two artificial hips, and he's 67 years old. Once you stop doing something you've always done, something that requires mental focus and precise physical strength, the road back quickly becomes too steep. Lewis was thinking about this just last weekend when his back ached in a way that it hadn't before. "I thought I might have to quit skiing," he tells Pat. But he went out and skied, and his back worked itself out, and the worry, once again, proved hypothetical. By 7 a.m., Lewis is headed home for coffee, Danish, and blueberries. He tries to get to his shop by 8. This is his morning routine nearly every morning, 8 months out of the year. He lives in the house between the one built by his father and the one built by his son. He makes his living on the lake. He plays on it, knows it, wakes to it every morning, watches it every evening. The lake is like family. The water level never drops much, just like Lewis's mood. As he steps off the boat, he looks down at his leg and notices that he forgot to put on his knee brace. "Huh," he says, "guess the leg is good." Lewis first became fascinated with slalom skiing when he watched and later met Bill Bryant, a local hotshot skier. Holy cow, Lewis thought. That Christmas, his mother gave him a subscription to the American Water Ski Association's magazine, and he devoured every issue cover to cover. Lewis's father, Milton, was a lawyer in Rocky Mount, where he was partners with Roy Cooper Sr., the father of the current governor. Perhaps feeling the pull of the lake himself, Milton bought a waterside lot in Lake Gaston's early days and began developing property there. In the early 1970s, Lewis married Marie, who had a soft spot for lakes, too. Right after that came the event that nearly ruined him, according to Marie. He watched the National Water Skiing Championships in Petersburg, Virginia, and that was it. Lewis already knew he didn't want a desk job, so he decided to build docks. Milton, who was always involved in side projects, found out that the pile-driving barge being used on marina construction near Bath wasn't doing the job. So he let Lewis use it to hammer poles down into the soggy bottom of Lake Gaston. A business was born, and Lewis made enough money building docks to keep living on the lake. Marie, however, knew the real reason for his job. Lewis's goal, she says, was always to water ski. But there's only so much room on a lake for docks. On Lake Gaston today, there are 5,500 docks, by one estimate. Luckily, Lewis was handy with an arc welder, which he used to build boat lifts from aluminum and steel. He could ship these boat lifts to any place where water meets land. Doozy Boat Lifts started in 1984 and took off. Lewis happily sold his dock building business. By that time, he'd been competing in slalom skiing competitions for a decade, and Marie had become a world-class boat driver, itself a valuable skill, and was the first woman to have the top driving role at the national championships. The couple moved from Milton's old gray weekend house on Lizard Creek into a larger one they built next door. You could see water from every window. But the view had started to change. Lake Gaston was completed in 1963, created mainly to generate hydroelectric power. In one crucial way, it stayed the same ever since. The water level by regulation could not vary by more than a foot, which is different from other lakes that regulate flooding. The water line back then is the water line now. The lake is 34 miles long, situated between Carr and Roanoke Rapids Lakes, right on the Virginia line. The five counties that surround it have always been rural, and at first many locals didn't realize what the lake would do for the communities. Long ago, one farmer told Lewis, "I wouldn't give you $100 for 10 Lake Gastons." lakefront property in the area was relatively cheap then. For a few thousand dollars, you could buy in and build a house. When Lewis first started skiing, most of the lake was surrounded by woods, thick forests of pine, dogwood, maple, and poplar. Then the houses came, slowly but surely, bigger and bigger. The new interest was good for Lewis's business, since the new homes needed boathouses, docks, and lifts. A farmer who dismissed Lake Gaston all those years ago? A few years after that conversation, his wife started selling real estate. The new homes brought more people, more boat traffic, more waves. Lake Gaston is only about a mile and a half across at its widest point, and the wind comes barreling through from west to east. A small ripple or even gentle waves aren't an issue for a fisherman or a family drifting along the main channel on inner tubes, but even tiny waves can send a slalom skier careening out of control. That meant slalom skiing is often regulated to coves and wide, quiet creeks, which are more protected from the wind. On Gaston, boats zip around in every nook and cranny of the lake, throwing a wake in every direction. Lake Gaston's problem is every lake's problem. As the value of lakefront property began to skyrocket, a booming economy sent a boat-buying public onto public waterways like never before. That pushed many competitive skiers, desperate for glassy water, away from public lakes to private ponds and reservoirs, where they could better control the environment. Today, Lewis is one of the last competitive slalom skiers on the lake, and he only does it in the morning because he has to. The raison d'être for his whole lake existence, skiing, is now mostly gone. For his son, though, a new door has already opened. Adam Field was always smaller than the other kids. That made him competitive. He played tennis and basketball in high school in Warren County. But at first, he really wasn't into skiing. Lewis wanted him to know how to do it, but he didn't make him do it. He tried to bribe Adam with Nintendo. "Skiing you can play," Lewis told him. Adam would get the skiing out of the way as quickly as possible. When he was around 10, though, something clicked, and Adam asked his dad for money to enter a competition. As he got a little older, he took an interest in a new water sport that was gaining popularity in the 1990s, wakeboarding. The tricks were bigger. The girls, they liked it. The sport was perfect for Lake Gaston. The boat goes slower, and the wider board means that small waves can't dangerously derail a run. Wakeboarding, with its focus on tricks, does not require buoys that can be stolen by pranksters. Adam was hooked. He trained and became a competitive wakeboarder, which meant that week in, week out, he traveled across the country, entering competitions and in many cases winning them. Sponsors noticed, and by his 20s, Adam had carved out a lucrative career. But the career of a competitive wakeboarder can be cruelly short. The pace of the tour circuit is tough. There's always travel to the next competition, sponsorship obligations, training, more travel, another competition. Athletes who have the most meteoric rise can have a spectacular fall. If you always win, and then one day you don't, the money and sponsors disappear quickly. Adam's rise was more measured. His parents encouraged him, but insisted that they wouldn't pay for him to become a wakeboarding bum. Adam knew he had to think of a way to stay involved in the sport he loved, even after his competitive days were over. In 2000, he started teaching from his parents' home and renting out boats and kayaks from the dock. That grew into his company, AF Wake, in 2006. He opened the business next to Eaton's Ferry Bridge, where he schedules lessons and sells everything from boards and skis to bikinis and hats. Now 37, Adam tools around Lake Gaston in a specialized Centurion wakeboarding boat, a $125,000 gleaming red and black Meteor of fiberglass and aluminum that can maintain its speed down to a tenth of a mile per hour. On this sunny morning, he's dressed in his usual attire, shirtless, wearing a pair of knockoff Ray-Bans, and teaching one of his best students, Finn Bullock Womble from Mebane. Adam guns the motor, and Finn, a board grabber, double-flipping phenomenon, takes off the wake. Finn's a world champion at age 13. His friends and fellow student Daniel Johnson snap Instagram shots as they go. "These boys are better than me," Adam says, "but he doesn't need to be good. He just needs to teach well. If he does that," he says, "I'll never have to stop." Not everyone's a fan, though. Fishermen don't like the wake, and some landowners think the waves are eroding their shorelines. Others are envious. Adam says he once got a text from a millionaire neighbor who'd seen him teaching, playing, and driving. "You have a great life," it read. Case in point, on a hot sunny afternoon, the whole family is at Lewis and Marie's, sitting on the deck watching the lake. Milton cracks jokes so dry that they take minutes to land. Marie smiles. Adam walks up to the house, followed by a Manhattanite named Lauren, who's here for 10 days to learn directly from Adam how to wakeboard. Later, there will be pizza, and the parents, kids, and students will all sit around a table near the front door and talk about the business, about waves, cats, friends, boats. And before that, Lauren wants to get one more session on the board. Adam cranks up his old backup boat, which has no speedometer. He doesn't need it. He keeps the boat at a consistent 14 to 16 miles per hour, perfect for a beginner like Lauren. She steadily gains confidence, slowly trawling back and forth across the wake, Adam stealthily cushioning her landings with subtle dips in speed. Lewis, riding shotgun, points out houses, old and new, the ones where owners have tripled the square footage, and the rare spot where a single wide still exists. As the sun starts to dip in the sky, Lauren finally lands the new trick, a wake-to-wake jump. The board smacks the twinkling water. Lauren beams, and as they near the dock, Adam wheels around. "That was awesome," she tells him, bobbing up and down. "Want to stop?" Adam asks. "No," she says. "Keep going." And Jeremy Markovich, the senior writer and editor at Our State, wrote that. Before we go, I would like to read my favorite author's, in Our State anyway, his column this month under We Live Here. A father and his two sons piece together a patchwork of North Carolina memories. Adventures with Toad and Wee by Drew Perry. Here they are on the golf course. Scruffy Duffers on a short course at Pinehurst Resort, a pair of putter boys learn the finer points of teeing up, playing through, and celebrating a good drive quietly. My five-year-old, the Wee, has taken to watching golf on TV on purpose. As in, he will climb into my lap, snuggle down, and actually pay attention for an actual period of time. It's startling and delightful, and it led him to wanting to know, could we do that too? Was there somewhere we could use real golf bats? "Oh, buddy," I said, "have I got the place for you." The red-roofed clubhouse at Pinehurst, Donald Ross's Sandhills masterpiece, rumbles out toward the world-renowned number two, sure, but it also faces something a little more kid-friendly. A huge 18-hole putting green named Thistledew, which is essentially the words Thistledew. And The Cradle, the brand new 9-hole par 3 course, meant to make the game seem a little less daunting than it might back over the rise. This is how my boys came to be standing on a tee box, holding kid-sized drivers, the Wee calling his a basher, and the Toad insisting that it was a whacker, with me hollering at them to stop. "Hold on, golf is a game of rules. One of those rules? We need to hit the ball one at a time." I don't think I learned much about parenting at the home of golf. No crystalline revelations, no heart swelling with pride when first one child, then the other, and the other managed to chip the ball into the air and onto the green. Instead, Even though chasing two boys around a golf course makes herding cats look like a promising career path, I just had fun. We caught a cool, breezy evening, and the light getting all along the bunkers and the pines, scenting the air, put me at ease. So when the wee hit a driver off the fairway onto the fourth hole, with me standing 30 yards ahead of him, his ball whistled by my ear, promising concussion stitches and what have you. Well, it just wasn't that big a deal. I jogged back his way to tell him that another good rule is to make sure nobody's in front of you when you take your turn. Up near the green, his brother swung a 7-iron, peeling a serious chunk of Bermuda out of the manicured ground. I hustled back that way to caddy for him and replace his divot. There's a beverage cart at the top of the hill by the eighth hole, and the boys took a break with a couple of lemonades while we watched a father and his teenage son crack majestic, soaring shots from a raised tee to a green maybe 90 yards below. "Wow," the wee whispered. I taught them that being quiet was good manners. I taught them the golf clap. Can I do that someday? Maybe, I told him. He'd seen me hit off the tee, the golf peg, back on the first, and while my shot was also soaring and majestic, it hit a tree that could only generously be described as close to where I was aiming. Golf is hard. No, it's not, he said, finishing his drink and grabbing his putter. Follow me, I'll show you. I carried their clubs back across the thistle too, and I watched while they lined up putts on their knees, while they failed to gauge the speed of the green, while they played through other groups with reckless, joyous abandon. I dropped one in myself from about 15 feet, and it felt like a miracle, because it was. Do it again, the toad said, retrieving my ball from me. Oh, I can't, I told him, and I didn't hit anything from even close to that distance for the rest of the evening. It didn't matter, though. The boys putted until the thrill finally began to wear off, and then they had chocolate milk back up at the clubhouse while I sipped an ice-cold beer, and we kept our voices down. So people finishing on the turtle-backed 18th green at Pinehurst No. 2 could bogey their way home in peace. Can we get our own real golf bats? They wanted to know, while we watched a woman chip to within maybe 18 inches. We clapped quietly for her. Maybe so, I said, thinking of Calamity, but also of more evenings like this. Maybe so. An ad here for Campbell University, Leading with Purpose, the private university of choice in North Carolina. Prepares leaders for North Carolina through 150-plus academic programs. Campbell.edu. Well, that's all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I enjoyed it myself, and I hope you did too. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleradingservice.org. Any comments or questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.